the heart of the mountain, the Arkenstone of Thrain.
The Arkenstone, the Arkenstone, murmured Thorin in the dark, half dreaming with his chin upon his knees. It was like a globe with a thousand facets. It shone like silver in the firelight, like water in the sun, like snow under the stars, like rain upon the moon.
But the enchanted desire of the hoard had fallen from Bilbo. All through their talk, he was only half listening to them. He sat nearest to the door, with one ear cocked for any beginnings of a sound without. His other was alert for echoes beyond the murmurs of the dwarves, for any whisper of a movement from far below. Darkness grew deeper, and he grew ever more uneasy. "Shut the door," he begged them. "I fear that dragon in my marrow. I like this silence far less than the uproar of last night. Shut the door before it's too late." Something in his voice gave the dwarves an uncomfortable feeling. Slowly Thorin shook off his dreams, and getting up he kicked away the stone that wedged the door. Then they thrust upon it, and it closed with a snap and a clang. No trace of a keyhole was there left on the inside. They were shut in the mountain. And not a moment too soon. They had hardly gone any distance down the tunnel when a blow smote the side of the mountain like the crash of battering rams made of forest oaks and swung by giants. The rock boomed, the walls cracked, and stones fell from the roof on their heads. What would have happened if the door had still been open, I don't like to think. They fled further down the tunnel, glad to be still alive, while behind them, outside, they heard the roar and rumble of Smaug's fury. He was breaking rocks to pieces, smashing wall and cliff with the lashings of his huge tail, till their little lofty camping ground, the scorched grass, the thrush's stone, the snail-covered walls, the narrow ledge, and all disappeared in a jumble of smithereens, and an avalanche of splintered stones fell over the cliff into the valley below. Smaug had left his lair in silent stealth, quietly soared into the air, and then floated heavy and slow in the dark like a monstrous crow down the wind towards the west of the mountain, in the hopes of catching unawares something or somebody there, and of spying the outlet to the passage which the thief had used. This was the outburst of his wrath, when he could find nobody and see nothing, even where he guessed the outlet must actually be. After he had let off his rage in this way, he felt better, and he thought in his heart that he would not be troubled again from that direction. In the meanwhile he had further vengeance to take.
"Barrel Rider," he snorted, "your feet came from the waterside, and up the water you came without a doubt. I don't know your smell, but if you are not one of those men of the lake, you had their help. They shall see me and remember who is the real king under the mountain."
He rose in fire and went away south towards the running river. Chapter 13. Not at home. In the meanwhile, the dwarves sat in darkness, and utter silence fell about them. Little they ate, and little they spoke. They could not count the passing time, and they scarcely dared to move, for the whisper of their voices echoed and rustled in the tunnel. If they dozed, they woke still to darkness and to silence going on unbroken. At last, after days and days of waiting, as it seemed, when they were becoming choked and dazed for want of air, they could bear it no longer. They would almost have welcomed sounds from below of the dragon's return. In the silence they feared some cunning devilry of his, but they could not sit there forever. Thorin spoke.
"Let us try the door," he said.
I must feel the wind on my face soon or die. I think I would rather be smashed by Smaug in the open than suffocate in here. So several of the dwarves got up and groped back to where the door had been. But they found that the upper end of the tunnel had been shattered and blocked with broken rock. Neither key nor the magic it had once obeyed would ever open that door again.
"We are trapped," they groaned. "This is the end. We shall die here."
But somehow, just when the dwarves were most despairing, Bilbo felt the strange lightening of the heart, as if a heavy weight had gone from under his waistcoat. "Come, come," he said. "While there's life, there's hope, as my father used to say, and third time pays for all. I'm going down the tunnel once again. I've been that way twice, when I knew there was a dragon at the other end, so I'll risk a third visit when I'm no longer sure. Anyway, the only way out is down, and I think this time you'd better all come with me." In desperation they agreed, and Thorin was the first to go forward by Bilbo's side. "Now do be careful," whispered the hobbit, "and as quiet as you can be. There may be no Smaug at the bottom, but then again there may be. Don't let us take any unnecessary risks." Down, down they went. The dwarves could not, of course, compare with the hobbit in real stealth, and they made a deal of puffing and shuffling, which echoes magnified alarmingly. But though every now and again Bilbo, in fear, stopped and listened, not a sound stirred below. Near the bottom, as well as he could judge, Bilbo slipped on his ring and went ahead. But he did not need it. The darkness was complete, and they were all invisible, ring or no ring. In fact, so black was it that the hobbit came to the opening unexpectedly, put his hand on air, stumbled forward, and rolled headlong into the hall. There he lay face downwards on the floor and did not dare to get up, or hardly even to breathe. But nothing moved. There was not a gleam of light, unless, as it seemed to him, when at last he slowly raised his head, there was a pale white glint above him and far off in the gloom, but certainly it was not a spark of dragon fire, though the worm stench was heavy in the place, and the taste of vapour was on his tongue. At length Mr. Baggins could bear it no longer. "Confound you, Smaug, you worm!" he squeaked aloud. "Stop playing hide-and-seek. Give me a light, and then eat me, if you can catch me." Faint echoes ran round the unseen hall, but there was no answer. Bilbo got up and found that he did not know in what direction to turn. "Now I wonder what on earth Smaug is playing at," he said. "He's not at home today, or tonight, or whatever it is, I do believe. If Oin and Gloin have not lost their tinder-boxes, perhaps we can make a little light and have a look round before the luck turns." "Light!" he cried. "Could anybody make a light?" The dwarves, of course, were very alarmed when Bilbo fell forward down the step with a bump into the hall, and they sat huddled just where he had left them, at the end of the tunnel. "Shh! Shh!" they hissed when they heard his voice. And though that helped the hobbit to find out where they were, it was some time before he could get anything else out of them. But in the end, when Bilbo actually began to stamp on the floor and screamed out, "Light!" at the top of his shrill voice, Thorin gave way, and Oin and Gloin were sent back to their bundles at the top of the tunnel. After a while, a twinkling gleam showed them returning. Oin with a small pine torch, a light in his hand, and Gloin with a bundle of others under his arm. Quickly Bilbo trotted to the door and took the torch, but he could not persuade the dwarves to light the others or to come and join him yet. As Thorin carefully explained, Mr. Baggins was still officially their expert burglar and investigator. If he liked to risk a light, that was his affair. They would wait in the tunnel for his report. So they sat near the door and watched. They saw the little dark shape of the hobbit start across the floor, holding his tiny light aloft. Every now and again, while he was still near enough, they caught a glint and a tinkle as he stumbled on some golden thing. The light grew smaller as he wandered away into the vast hall. Then it began to rise, dancing into the air. Bilbo was climbing the great mound of treasure. Soon he stood upon the top and still went on. Then they saw him halt and stoop for a moment. But they did not know the reason. It was the Arkenstone, the heart of the mountain. So Bilbo guessed from Thorin's description. But indeed, there could not be two such gems, even in so marvelous a hoard, even in all the world. Ever as he climbed, the same white gleam had shone before him and drawn his feet towards it. Slowly it grew to a little globe of pallid light. Now, as he came near, it was tinged with a flickering sparkle of many colours at the surface, reflected and splintered from the wavering light of his torch. At last he looked down upon it, and he caught his breath. The great jewel shone before his feet of its own inner light, and yet, cut and fashioned by the dwarves, who had dug it from the heart of the mountain long ago, it took all light that fell upon it, and changed it into 10,000 sparks of white radiance, shot with glints of the rainbow. Suddenly Bilbo's arm went towards it, drawn by its enchantment. His small hand would not close about it, for it was a large and heavy gem. But he lifted it, shut his eyes, and put it in his deepest pocket. "Now I am a burglar indeed," thought he. "But I suppose I must tell the dwarves about it, sometime. They did say I could pick and choose my own share, and I think I'd choose this if they took all the rest." All the same, he had an uncomfortable feeling that the picking and choosing had not really been meant to include this marvelous gem, and that trouble would yet come of it. Now he went on again. Down the other side of the great mound he climbed, and the spark of his torch vanished from the sight of the watching dwarves. But soon they saw it far away in the distance again. Bilbo was crossing the floor of the hall. He went on until he came to the great doors at the further side, and there a draught of air refreshed him, but it almost puffed out his light. He peeped timidly through, and caught a glimpse of great passages and of the dim beginnings of wide stairs going up into the gloom. And still there was no sight nor sound of Smaug. He was just going to turn and go back when a black shape swooped at him and brushed his face. He squeaked and started, stumbled backwards and fell. His torch dropped head downwards and went out. "Only a bat, I suppose, and hope," he said miserably. "But now what am I to do? Which is east, south, north, or west? Thorin, Balin, Oin, Gloin, Feely, Keely," he cried as loud as he could. It seemed a thin little noise in the wide blackness. "The light's gone out! Someone come and find me and help me!" For the moment his courage had failed altogether. Faintly the dwarves heard his small cries, though the only word they could catch was, "Help!"
"Now what on earth or under it has happened?" said Thorin. "Certainly not the dragon, or he would not go on squeaking."
They waited a moment or two, and still there were no dragon noises. No sound at all, in fact, but Bilbo's distant voice. Come, one of you, get another light or two, Thorin ordered. It seems we've got to go and help our burglar.
It's about our turn to help, said Balin, and I'm quite willing to go. Anyway, I expect it's safe for the moment.
Glóin lit several more torches, and then they all crept out, one by one, and went along the wall as hurriedly as they could. It was not long before they met Bilbo himself, coming back towards them. His wits had quickly returned as soon as he saw the twinkle of their lights.
"Only a bat and a dropped torch, nothing worse," he said in answer to their questions. Though they were much relieved, they were inclined to be grumpy at being frightened for nothing. But what they would have said, if he had told them at that moment about the Arkenstone, I don't know.
The mere fleeting glimpses of treasure, which they had caught as they went along, had rekindled all the fire of their dwarvish hearts. And when the heart of a dwarf, even the most respectable, is wakened by gold and by jewels, he grows suddenly bold, and he may become fierce. The dwarves, indeed, no longer needed any urging. All were now eager to explore the hall while they had the chance, and willing to believe that, for the present, Smaug was away from home. Each now gripped a lighted torch, and as they gazed, first on one side and then on another, they forgot fear and even caution. They spoke aloud, and cried one to another, as they lifted old treasures from the mound or from the wall, and held them in the light, caressing and fingering them. Feely and Keely were almost in merry mood, and finding still hanging there many golden harps strung with silver, they took them and struck them, and being magical, and also untouched by the dragon, who had small interest in music, they were still in tune. The dark hall was filled with a melody that had long been silent, but most of the dwarves were more practical. They gathered gems and stuffed their pockets, and let what they could not carry fall back through their fingers with a sigh. Thorin was not least among these, but always he searched from side to side for something which he could not find. It was the Arkenstone. But he spoke of it yet to no one. Now the dwarves took down mail and weapons from the walls, and armed themselves. Royal indeed did Thorin look, clad in a coat of gold-plated rings, with a silver-hafted axe in a belt crusted with scarlet stones.
"Mr. Baggins," he cried, "here is the first payment of your reward. Cast off your old coat and put on this."
With that he put on Bilbo a small coat of mail, wrought for some young elf prince long ago. It was of silver steel, which the elves call mithril, and with it went a belt of pearls and crystals, a light helm of figured leather, strengthened beneath with hoops of steel, and studded about the brim with white gems, was set upon the hobbit's head.
"I feel magnificent," he thought. "But I expect I look rather absurd. How they would laugh on the hill at home. Still, I wish there was a looking-glass handy."
All the same, Mr. Baggins kept his head more clear of the bewitchment of the hoard than the dwarves did. Long before the dwarves were tired of examining the treasures, he became wary of it and sat down on the floor. And he began to wonder nervously what the end of it all would be.
"I'd give a good many of these precious goblets," he thought, "for a drink of something cheering out of one of Bjorn's wooden bowls."
"Thorin," he cried aloud, "what next? We are armed, but what good has any armor ever been before against Smaug the dragon? This treasure is not yet won back. We are not looking for gold yet, but for a way of escape. And we've tempted luck too long."
"You speak the truth," answered Thorin, recovering his wits. "Let us go. I will guide you. Not in a thousand years should I forget the ways of this palace."
Then he hailed the others, and they gathered together,
and holding their torches above their heads, they passed through the gaping doors, not without many a backward glance of longing. Their glittering mail they had covered